Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Do you want to go to rugby heaven? Let's go back to 1987 with Squidge. With Squidge, let's go back to 87 with Squidge.
Hello, good afternoon, good evening, good welcome, good night, and good etc. to the Squidge Rugby World Cup Retrospective, the only rugby podcast where it is not currently the Six Nations and Super Rugby is not about to start, because it will not start for about another 12 years. This is the 1987 of rugby. I am joined, as ever, by Mr. Will Owen. How are we?
I'm all right, thank you. And you know what, with that in mind, I just think 1987 is great, and I just think that it requires so much analysis. I think we're really struggling.
Yeah. I think we should really get a proper expert on who really, really knows his stuff and works professionally in that field.
Yeah. I think that's a good shout. I mean, technically, we both do, but not very
but
well.
Not really, do we?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. We're there to lower the bar.
Yeah. It's not the same thing. So I had a great idea thrown to me, because the moment I finished watching this game, what should be the first recommended video? But a video by Wibble Rugby.
Never heard of them.
There's only one place to go, only one person to get in, and that is Connor himself from Wibble Rugby. How are you doing? How are we?
That was a great introduction, guys. That's very well. Sensational. Very well, thank you, gentlemen. Very well. Your fine selves?
Entirely alive, which,
yep.
You know, 2 weeks into the Six Nations, I'll take. I spoke to a current international who plays in the Women's Six Nations a few weeks ago. And I mentioned like how tough a time the Six Nations is for me and how exhausting it is. Then I was like, oh no, she knows this because... she
plays in the thing.
She puts her body on the line for this. Like, me being tired is nothing. And I had to walk back on that very quickly.
Probably experiences about 10 car crash related injuries, you know, similar on every weekend, you know, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah. And it was like, you know, when we had like a bit of small talk about like, you know, what are you doing at the weekend? She asked me and I was like, oh, you know, whatever. And then I asked her, what about yourself? And she said, oh, we've got Harlequins away. And you're like, oh, yeah, of course. I did know that. Anyway, we're not doing a Premier 15's 2022 retrospective.
Yet,
but we'll get to that.
When we've done a lot of other tournaments, we'll probably get there.
What's the next on the agenda? Is it going to be 91 and then 95, or is that the way it's going to go?
Well, we did 2011 first.
Yeah.
And now 87.
How did you reflect on the Sam Warburton, like the Alan Rowland incident?
Oh, boy. the true answer to that question is for over 2 hours. I think that's our longest ever episode, right, Robbie?
Yeah.
And there was some tears and very little blood.
Okay. Got the reference. Sorry, gentlemen. I keep rudely interrupting. Apologies.
No, please do.
Interrupting more. Interrupting now.
Look, I have spoken too much so far. We like to have guests for a reason. How do you, as an analyst, as an actual professional person, how do you look back on, let's just take those last 10 years since 2011, how the game has changed since then?
Goodness, I mean... that is a really good question, because obviously famous in terms of like strength and conditioning, in terms of performance profiling, in terms of trend analysis and everything that's come along with it, like it's improved absolutely no end. I mean, for example, like you have new KPIs that are being measured, you know, it's not just now post-tackle contact, it's about like smaller things. And also there's all these little trends going on right now about companies and like teams trying to work out the winning stats, because, you know, you can have a team's, you know, making more line breaks, making more meters, you know, and they still lose the game. You know, they still lose the game. So it's incredibly getting far, far more data-driven in the fact that there's, and this is the way for most sport, like the second that more money gets involved, you know, you are going to have people trying to take every out little crumb of knowledge that you can. In that way, I think we're still very up much in our infancy in terms of like analytics. You know, I know it sounds kind of crazy with all the technology we have, but for example, we've got like this software called Ritzo now, which is actually like where, for example, it goes into, obviously, if you're an analyst and you're giving feedback to a player and you're going, we had a 3-on-2 overlap here, this opportunity was on. And he goes, no, it wasn't on, you weren't there. Well, Ritzo actually allows VR, it's actually allows wow. you to actually go into the perspective of the player. He'll map the opposition players and your player itself, and you'll be able to see exactly how much distance you had in between the, how close, you know, the outside defender was to cutting off the pass.
Wow. All that's incredible.
Can you use Rizzo to get inside the mind of Zebra Fly Half Antonio Rizzo?
I mean, probably. I mean, it was, it's called something along those lines. But it was, because I learned that when I was at Harbury, and we realized a couple of other teams were taking it on. But obviously it means that the player can then actually look, reflect, and because obviously bias and subjectivity and you know, everything, the pressures of the game can weigh on you.
You know, here's a question. Do you ever have fun with that and sort of like pretend you were better at rugby than you were by like playing it as a video game?
All the time. All the time. Like, I could throw this. I probably could have actually thrown the 15-meter cutout pass. I probably could have. But, I've got him opposite me. So it's a little bit. I mean, him is usually every player who's obviously much bigger than me and much like would gargantuan. But so really, it's really good training because the coaches can actually take their players, you know, like into the position and go, look, this is where decision making could be improved. That's only one element where we're improving, you know, because obviously a lot of the players go, you don't play anymore. You played in a bygone era where, you know, as you say, rugby has completely changed. But tell that to, you know, like, you still get some players who come in, they're so good. They're still like Mike Catt. I remember him a couple of years ago doing like, you know, it was just a fun thing where England were trying to get a rugby ball bounced into a bin off the ground. He comes in, just throws it and goes straight in first time. Everyone else like, was throwing about 10, 15, 20 times, couldn't do it and getting really frustrated. So class is permanent. So in that case, pretty good training tool.
That's genuinely so cool.
You must have at some point though, just gone, you know, everyone else is on lunch. I'm just going to put myself into the Johnny Wilkinson drop goal.
Of course. I mean, that is without doubt one of the most incredible. I mean, admittedly, it was passed to the wrong side. You know, but passed it to the wrong side of him. So, because he says that, you know, he'd missed them all on his left, give it go on his right. And Johnny's obviously left footed. But I mean, that's the greatest rugby moment of any English fan. So, I've gone back to those times. Yeah.
Didn't you? Aren't I right in bringing up you played against Will Greenwood?
I put Jason Robertson in for a try once.
That's even better.
That's a better story. Tell us all of it.
It was
in the VR here, Connor.
It was just a touch. It was like a kind of touch kind of thing that we were doing. It was like a promotional thing, and I ended up like being like, you know, RFU emails kind of thing, and like, you know, just kind of tagged along. And you had Robbo like out of my shoulder. I remember just literally committing the inside shoulder of this probably like this girl, probably about 25 26, probably been playing for a couple of years, but literally just then spun it out and like Robbo walked over. I'm like, yes, you know. Magnificent, you know, just put Jason Robertson in for a try. I'll take that.
I would have cried.
Yeah,
Will Greenwood is my absolute idol. I looked a little bit like him growing up, and on top of that, I've got his very similar build. So in a way, like I always figured, and I was always better with my hands probably than I was as a crash option. But that's kind of why I just kind of gravitated to following Greenwood. If I'm being
And you got to live as him. Did you? Were you like in your brain pretending it was Wales and the quarterfinal again?
Well, you had to bring that up.
Did you put him in?
2015, I think you're
talking. I meant 2003.
Jason
Robertson. He was being nice there. He was throwing you a bone.
I know. I feel really bad to the dick there, to be fair. And you guys, in that game, you guys were absolutely ripping us apart. Like, you know, we were just like at sixes and sevens is the only way to put it. And then we brought Mike Catt on and just totally and utterly, changed the game. Totally and utterly changed the game. I mean, don't get me wrong, that Robinson break was magnificent. You know, it was just majestic. But really, for me, Mike Catt came on, just another kicking option, just started putting kicks into like 50-22. So I think he may have managed about 3-4 50-22s in that game. Obviously, you know, Wales retained possession, but that's how good he was in that one. So, yeah, I thought, I'm not going to lie, when I saw that, I know obviously we're talking about 1987, but when I saw that game, I really thought that they kind of did under Ruddock. But I thought if Hansen had stayed, that Wales were just going to actually start tearing it up, like in terms of dynasty kind of level, if I'm being honest, after that game, because it was just incredible rugby.
Yeah, yeah. But then there's a lot of, like, there was a recent pretty good documentary on it called Slammed, just on like the amount of infighting that went on within all of Wales.
Yeah.
Because it is just so cultural that it's all, you are fighting the next village, and all of it's why Welsh rugby Twitter is so obsessed with fighting itself rather than actually, you know, it's not like South African rugby Twitter is very good for all ganging up as one unit on whoever the enemy is that week.
The enemy being somebody who doesn't say South African is the best player in the world, for example.
Yeah, like for a long time, it was everyone but Razzie.
Whereas, and Lukanyuam, like, he was okay. Busy.
Yeah. Lukanyuam is incredible. Like, he's a big game player. I mean, just in the big games, he just shows up like in a big way, which is very annoying for me.
Yeah. But also, you've just developed immunity against South Africans for about 60 minutes by saying that.
Oh, God, probably. But the thing is, that's the thing. The way that I look at it, I made an entire video describing the South African defensive system and going, hey, you guys smashed it. So, you know, give credit. So hopefully that makes up for any banter that I throw the way.
Right. Should we mention 1987?
No.
Good idea. Great. So, Connor, how was your dinner?
I burned about 5-6 chicken wings and I ended up having cheesy beans on toast
It's pretty good. Well, Robbie, I saw you just tweeted about the thing of all of the Wales squad announcing what the first meal they're going to cook is. Have you seen this, Connor?
So announcing huge deal.
I'm quite curious to see this though, actually, to be fair.
Yeah, there's a lot of beans on toast.
Yeah.
Spaghetti bolognese or carbonaras.
There's Lewis Rhys Samet speaking in future tense.
Yes. Like, I intend to learn to make a spaghetti bolognese.
And don't get me wrong, my dad was always eat your porridge, you know, like huge porridge, tons of syrup and banana and stuff like that. And that was all grand. But I eat so much biltong. I eat so much.
Really? You're definitely in with South Africans, aren't you?
Yeah, well, no, I mean, it was because I was a couple of years ago, I was looking for a snack because I was getting really hungry on coming back from training and gym and stuff like that. And literally, I started buying those really like expensive £2.50 bags of biltong, 25 grams, absolute extortion. So I ended up like literally finding butchers and like sampling from Amazon, you know, helping Jeff Bezos's pension fund, but literally just finding the best one. So eventually now I just go for a regular like 2-week trip to York, you know, like 2-week trip. Like I'll take every 2 weeks I'll go there, pick up a kilo, I'll bring it back.
That's amazing. I love the thought that you have personally funded Jeff Bezos's exhibition to space
via love for biltong. Yeah. The highlight of that video was, as Robbie, you pointed out on Twitter, Tame Basham saying that once his parents went away and he had roughly 50 cheese and ham toasties in a week, which means 7+ per day.
But it is like, it's like, you know, when I was ill last year and I had to take my tablets every 4 hours, like, you've got to schedule those toasties.
But that's kind of compulsory, not voluntary in a way.
He was a grown boy. He was wanting to play rugby. You know, I know he played when he was a kid on a field next to the horse stables, and often the horse would run onto the pitch. He needed to scare the horses off. He needed to have ham and cheese toast. I imagine he's like Paddington. He kept one of his scrum cap at all times.
It's roughly one every 3 hours. It really reminds me of, you remember that guy who went viral for saying that he had a diet of just fish and rice cakes? He was on television, he'd say, oh, at 12 o'clock I'll have my fish, and at 2 o'clock I'll have my fish, and then I'll have it with a rice cake. And at 4 o'clock I'll have fish, and then at 6 o'clock I'll have fish and a rice cake. And he just kept going like that every 2 hours, and now that guy is shredded, man.
He's shreddies.
Yeah, is he? Shredded.
Like, genuinely, he's like, I've seen him on Instagram and he is massive.
when you say shredded, do you mean like he's like a scaly fish because he is what he eats? He's like one of like when you see a fish bones and it's like it's, he's been shredded. He's lost all of the fish off his bones.
He must have played havoc with his digestive system.
Yeah, yeah.
Used to it.
Yeah, but I mean, clearly he was very invested in whatever training plan he was given, if he was willing to go to those lengths. So fair play to him. It would have been better if, like, I'd ripped out, like, and that man is Charlie Yules or something like that. But yeah. Alas, no.
I always kind of got involved in the fact, I mean, when I was, there was this little co-op just around the corner, like when I was walking back, and they used to have like this huge, like full fat, like litre of milk kind of thing. And it had proud sponsor of Ulster Rugby used by Ulster Rugby. And I was like, yes, so easily won over. It was like training. There we go. You know, just downing literally.
This one's for you, Andrew Trimble.
I have drunk my pint of milk and I am now Stuart McCloskey.
It's a very short transition, but you could say that about Orlando Bloom. Thank God that never happened. But
what?
No, Orlando Bloom. There was this. Well, I'm kind of hoping you don't get the reference, but there was this whole film like where literally he was like a boxer, the most unboxing like celebrity I could ever imagine starring in a boxing film. And his secret is having a glass of milk a day.
Oh, it's underwhelming.
Yeah.
But
I've had like something cups of milk a day every day since I was like three. And apparently it's like developed this kind of superhuman ability for him to hit harder, which is just ridiculous.
I'm not going to lie to you. That sounds like a horrible film.
Yeah, it's not great.
And like, look, this is a film podcast. People have been critical of the lack of film chat lately.
Yeah, too much 87 chat, they say.
I am happy to watch almost anything. I have absolutely no interest in watching a boxing movie of Orlando Bloom. I really don't like Orlando Bloom. I think he is the blandest screen presence imaginable. I think
more like Orlando Bland.
I have said that before.
I'm sure he's a nice guy, but what presence does he have? Like in Kingdom of Heaven, when he's doing that rallying speech for like, you know, for the knights, I'm like, literally, I wouldn't follow you into a, I wouldn't follow you anywhere. Like, seriously, it's just, I wouldn't follow you into a brewery. They'll have a really great, awesome party with everything involved and on the house. I wouldn't.
Biltong available.
I would trust your ability for me to have a good time in there, to enjoy
I've
myself.
Also just realised I should have said Orlando Bloom, but never mind.
There are moments in, like, Pirates of the Caribbean where it'll cut, there'll be like a hot, passionate scene between him and Keira Knightley. And you're thinking, like, why is Keira Knightley making out with like a wardrobe? Because he is thoroughly wooden. He is the blandest. I mean, there was a film, and I forgot what it's called. It had like a really generic title. I saw in the cinema a few years ago. It was a spy movie with Noomi Rapace in the lead role.
Was it called James Bond?
It was called, yes, James Bond and The Nice Day Out. It was it was called. Like,
it's a good question. What does Bond do on his day off?
I'm sad now because I'm thinking of No Time to Die. But anyways, continue. You were saying.
I mean, though, that is the Bond movie I'd be interested in making. Is Bond when he doesn't have anything to do and he's just hanging around the house and he's just waiting there and he's really, really bored. That is more interesting to me than an actual spy movie. But that says a lot about my tastes. So yeah, this really like actually quite good Noomi Rapace spy movie, and I was pretty engaged, I'm pretty into it. And then about 40 minutes in, Orlando Bloom comes in, there's another agent, he just turns up. And inside 5 minutes, I'd fallen asleep. And I slept for about 20 minutes through this film that I was enjoying until he turned up, because I just find him the most boring man in the world.
He's going to live. Orlando Bloom's going to live.
Even when he plays, like, he's playing, I mean, before he was in Lord of the Rings, I used to spend my summers in Suffolk, a lot of them. And my nan, like, would be playing out literally over the fields, like, doing all kind of, like, you know, we used to try and roll hay bales down a hill and, like, and run on top of them.
Right. Yeah.
It was very, very edgy for being 10. But my nan would like invite, literally, after we'd be back by 9 o'clock, and then literally she'd have dinner on one of those beautiful trays and she'd put on an episode of Midsummer Murders. And obviously, I had no idea who Orlando Bloom was at this point, but he was in an episode of Midsummer Murders before he actually got the Legolas gig. And I'm just watching it and I'm thinking, this guy is trying so hard to be like bad, like good bad. He's trying to pull off a good bad guy. And it's just like, you just want to kind of pat him on the head and go, bless you.
Literally
that. And he's like, literally, he grabs this bloke by the scruff of the neck. He's like, have you got that, Jack? It's literally like that. It's just in that voice that he has. But I can't begrudge his voice. He just can't really pull it off.
I'm just really glad we're making really good use of the rugby analyst we've got on this week.
Hey, I'm fine with this conversation. To be fair, I have to talk about rugby and do rugby all day, every day. So this is good to branch out, to be fair.
God, tell me about it. Should we mention the game? Should we do that?
I think it's about time. We're probably 20 minutes in.
So today's game is Argentina's win over Italy. Argentina's first ever World Cup win after losing to Fiji early in the competition. Italy also, the first time they've not started the game with Stefano Gazzoni at fullback, which is basically
the Dolmio man.
Yeah, basically the same as playing a game for the first time. So yeah, so it's a pretty important game because whoever loses this is completely out of World Cup contention.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if they were doing the third place automatically qualifies for the following World Cup at this point. But if so,
let's face it, they didn't plan that far ahead. I think they conceptualized this World Cup about 3 days before it started.
I just love the amateurism about it, though, to be fair. Like, you know, part of me likes seeing just the, I mean, that's the thing. When you try and analyze that, I could, there's no shape. There was no nothing. It was just so loose. In a way, I kind of miss those days because it allowed for absolutely chaotic rugby. But simultaneously, it's like, I was just looking at some of the stuff and so many knock-ons, so many skips. You do kind of underestimate how much we'd progressed as in terms of playing. I think a good level 5 team, level 6 team I'm pretty sure they would smash, the majority of those World Cup teams, if I'm being honest.
I was saying, I think it's probably a similar standard to the under 15s team I coach. And I think that's probably genuine because of the level of sort of catch pass that even amateur players are at now and just modern shape doesn't even need to be professional.
And that, I mean, one of the guys who was actually one of my nominations for Dick of the Day was the Pumas 13, Cuesta Silva. Mm-hmm. And not like passer, a high tackle, 28-56, fumble ruins entire backline move. But then he made the Pumas' first try and made it right before halftime on the counter, so kick return. So it's
it's completely impossible in any of these games in 87 to tell whether someone's having a good game.
Yeah. Right. So I wrote down, so to briefly touch upon the Argentine team. So they had Sebastian Salvat at fullback, who you touted before, Robbie, is a player that you thought was quite promising because he was 20 years old.
I liked him in their first game. So
in the first 10 minutes, he'd made two knock-ons and kicked two balls out in the full. So I thought, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to start a tally of how many mistakes he'd made. And I'd got to half an hour and decided he was having quite a good game.
I mean, I had written down about 10 minutes in, just in my notes, Salva, I trusted you. Because, as you say, he knocks the ball on twice. One is a high ball, one under no pressure when they've got space out wide, and he's in the kind of traditional 13-ish position. And if he gives it to his winger, he's got a nice run. Just knocks it on, just drops it under no pressure, kicks the ball out twice. And in on the full, and boy, he keeps on that going in the second half as well.
He loves it.
And he was so good and so solid. And there was something really novel about seeing a fullback in 1970 who could catch a high ball. That was just very excited.
Both
by
him and Daniele Tebaldi, who could catch a ball so well that I'm pretty sure he got penalised for catching one in the second half.
So, we mentioned touching on the teams.
Yes.
Italy do make the change of Stefano Gazzoni, who was off at Connor, Jimmy had it. But the opening game, Italy had a fullback who looked like a Dormio man from the adverts, who dropped every high ball he tried to take. And at one point, caught the ball behind his own try line after New Zealand kicked it dead. And then, in the process of putting it down, knocked it on. And he was glorious.
And they conceded a try 20 seconds later.
He was phenomenally dumb and fun to watch.
Yeah, I miss him already.
And they have, quite understandably, dropped him. He will never win another international cap. He never plays for Italy again. Daniele Tebaldi, who is unfortunately of no relation to Tito Tebaldi.
No, he's his uncle. He's Tito's uncle.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Of some relation, but not the relation I Googled to Tito Tebaldi. He comes in and Oscar Collado, who played 12 against the All Blacks, moves into 10 because, boy, he had such a good game.
I just can't see. I don't understand how you can judge if someone. I mean, you have your standard KPIs, but there was so much. I can't even describe it. It's just something everywhere. You know, it's like
your hand gestures did do it justice.
At 24:09, you had Lanze, like Italian 11, literally taking a pass, literally 2 meters from the line, and just hitting into touch like Luke Cowan-Dickey style. And it's like, what the fuck are you doing? So swear on the pod.
Sorry. You're not allowed to say words that aren't swear words on the pod. But so Juan Lanza played the previous game for Argentina, and we both gave him dick of the day, right, Robbie?
Yes.
Because he twice got the ball and ran backwards sort of 10, 15 metres plus. And so they've decided, you know what? We want to drop him, but they don't know who to drop him for because he has an identical twin competing for his position. So they pick them both and hope for the best.
Well, it went so badly last time. What if we put two of them in and see if they cancel each other out? You know, maybe the problem was you didn't have enough Lanza.
Connor, I've just sent you the video of him running backwards, just for your viewing pleasure later on.
Okay, I will.
But yeah, they put two of him in, and they're
Grant
pretty
Nisbet
much the same result.
Says when he's going through the teams, if you want to tell them apart, just check their jersey numbers, which has been his strategy on commentary ever since.
It's like the Curry twins. You know, you can never have enough curry. I'm still wondering. I'm still wondering when Ben Curry's going to... I don't think he will, to be fair. But it would be... Not for a while, at least. But that's... Sorry, I'm sidetracking.
No. Please.
Keep sidetracking. Please. And swearing.
Genuinely.
I can't really talk about England matters, is the unfortunate situation. But
Course.
Yeah, but... In terms of like the night, who was your dick of the day for this game then? For Italy,
we'll reveal at the end of the day. At the end of the episode.
I didn't realize. But
that's okay.
Do need to say one thing. Did you see the? I think it was Gabriel Travaglini. He does like a Mac Hansen off.
Yes, yes.
He gets taken out, but that was like 22 meters. That was magnificent. Like just because I don't understand what the hell. I forget what team it was. Was it Argentina just kept kicking long restarts and they just kept going
both
there.
Teams, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, so at one point, Collado, the Italian 10, takes a long run up and wellies the restart as far as he can. And it goes between the posts.
Yes. It's like, the first time I've ever seen
as
that.
As though it's going to be 3 points. And like, the thing is, right, by 60 minutes into the game, he had got the ball through the post from as many restarts as actual penalty shots at goal. And he's had 7 shots at goal.
Yeah. It's just a little bit like, it's just, you know, I do believe to a certain extent, like everything is cyclic. I mean, you do see certain things that's the thing, like defences adapt after a while. For example, they adapt for the wide play and therefore rush defence starts coming to the fore. But then you get France, as you said in your video, Squidge, you know, like Robbie, where like France do that, those pick and goes off first phase and they're just going up the guts and rush defence can't do anything there. You know, it can't force you back. It can't do anything. And then you've got like Joe Schmidt, a.k.a. God, basically just, you know, like his, you know, Leinster team bringing back like a bunch of old Wallaby moves from the late 90s and ripping apart, I think it was his Leinster team ripping apart Northampton, like with a standard like Ian Healy try, you know, in 2012, or it may have been Racing they're up against. But it was just like all those moves that are totally and utterly like kind of like, you know, stuff that's been found so far in the past that it's not really thought of, or defenses aren't built for it anymore. And then suddenly, you know, you bring them back and they're really effective. I do, maybe they need tweaking, don't get me wrong, but that's one thing that I was looking back at this, and like you see some moves from like the Italian team where like it's just, for example, 10 passes to 12 and 10 cuts in under him, takes a short like almost like league style line off, and like hopefully you know 12's running quite an inside, running a line to target inside shoulders, and that opens the gap just outside for 10 to take the receipt off him. But it's like that kind of stuff there. You got to think the catch-up defense would often work and snuff it out now, but if you've got like a player like Jamie Roberts or Manu Tuilagi, like screaming down like against the grain and like holding that inside, causing the speed, you know, causing the congestion. It can happen. I still think it's quite, especially when you've got Jamie Roberts actually holding the ball in two hands towards him. You know, you can't go anywhere. You know,
That's interesting. The other thing that I noted along similar lines was, you know, the way people passed the ball back in the 80s. of that kind of like ball out in front of them and that kind of like shipping it on. Yeah, and it's still spam, but it was odd. It's very different to how, you know, you're kind of taught to pass now.
Yeah, from the hip. From now, it's like you don't cock your arm, it's from the hip, you know, like, yeah, like that. And for that, it was very flaily. It was almost like they were trying to get their arms through, you know, a tackle and like have it in a position where they could just pop past, which I disagree with entirely, by the way. I can't disagree with that enough. A coach tried to tell me once, you know, put your arms through the tackle and then pop. I'm like, no, you need to win the collision if you want.
Yeah, 100%. So there's one pass that Martin Yangula, the who comes in at 9 for Argentina to win his only cap for his country.
Wow.
He goes off injured after about an hour, which must be gutting for him.
Yeah.
I really, really felt for the guy. This is the only cap he ever won. And it was in a big game in the World Cup. At one point, he throws this like incredibly flat pass that is great and cuts out two men in a way that would be really difficult to throw with kind of modern passing technique. But because he was good at the really weird and less effective technique that they used at the time.
Yeah, sure. Because like the trajectory of the ball, especially with the leather ball.
Yeah. There was that brief phase around like 2012 where people started doing the kind of end-over-end pass that came in the rugby league because it cut through the wind better. And you saw like Ashton did it. Canfor Tuoli used to do it quite a lot. And they'd often do it for, like, from pickups and they kind of like flick the ball over so it span a bit, but end-over-end, like as though it was a grubber or something, but through the air. And I wonder if there's like occasionally that kind of pass coming in. It won't be very effective, but it's just like there are situations in which that could be useful.
It's true. I mean, you've got like, for example, an incomplete pass where a pass gets thrown now and it, you know, hits the ground and it's collected. Mm. It can be so dangerous because the second it hits the ground, the entire defending team stand off. They're like, whoa, what's going on here? You know, like it's
undefendable.
Yeah, exactly. It breaks what they're used to. It breaks pattern. And I suppose I'm kind of curious as to what innovations will kind of come in. And I'm still waiting. When I was younger, I had this idea of like, you know, you've got lifters. Like, so, you know, you've got the 13, you know, who usually blitzes out and cuts out the outside options. Imagine a flat option and you had a lifting pod. I don't know if it's even legal, but you had a lifting pod in the middle of the play. So literally it goes to like a free pod turn that you lift it up and then he passes over. Like, so the foot, so say, for example, you've got the 13 there rushing up, like, and he's there. Basically, he gets lifted there and then passes over the 13 to like a guy coming in off the straight line.
Robbie, are you thinking what I'm thinking?
I'm thinking exactly what you're thinking.
So basically, Connor, me and Robbie for a while said that one day we're going to coach the Barbarians together as a duo.
This has been like a 10-year plan. We've been talking about this.
And I've just realised right this second we need to get you in on this.
I don't know if it's even legal, but imagine like your defensive team and suddenly you've got Maro Toje being lifted up in the air, facing outwards, like, what? The absolute, like, just passes over. Flat, obviously, but someone coming straight through. And
lifting pods open up so many options for backline moves. That's all I'll say.
Before about trying to, like, if you get a lifting pod to throw a player over the defensive line, see if it would work.
I do can, basically.
Get the beast out of retirement.
Yeah. Exactly. You've got to get, like, the beast and Naikani, like, two like, insanely strong props who can then, like, throw them quite cleanly over the top. And you probably need it to be quite a light, agile player. You need it to be someone like Shane Williams.
It has to be a winger
or someone.
Yeah.
Gymnastics. There must be more of those players out there. I think Ollie Hassel Collins might have a background. I feel like I've heard that somewhere.
Can't pick him though. He plays London Irish.
Yeah, but yeah, I think there's something in that. I think there's something in chucking lifting pods.
And look,
and general lifting pod moves.
Yeah. There's a lot that we'll have to get into. I mean, we can't reveal too many of them on the podcast because otherwise, what if our opposition do team analysis by going, oh, their coaches did, you know, 70 plus episodes of a podcast about old World Cups. Listen to all of them to find out any potential backline moves they might do.
And all you have to do is really go back to the Otago days of like maybe about 10 years ago and just look at the crazy stuff they were pulling and just bring it out. I think that's what Joe Schmidt did, to be honest. He'd just look at Mitre 10 games and like pick, oh, I like that. I really like
noted
that retirement. Yeah.
Yeah.
Any examples? Anything that stands out from your mind?
Yeah, there was. Thing is, I'm probably gonna have to bring it up on YouTube, actually, is the thing.
Okay. So whilst you're getting that up, there's a moment quite early on in this game where the game kicked off at around 12:30 New Zealand time. Local time, the commentator says, you know what, I think I might stick around for the end of this game and not go for lunch at 2 o'clock.
Wait, he said, did
the
he?
The commentator says
I missed that.
The commentator says after about 5 minutes, this looks to be quite a good game. I think I'm going to stick around and watch the end of it.
That
mate,
is...
you're being paid to watch
paid
it.
To commentate.
You're getting paid to be a rugby commentator. Like, do you realise how privileged your job is? You get put up at some of the best hotels, courtesy of broadcast companies.
It really makes me appreciate Clive Woodward, because at least he sticks around to the game he's paid to watch. At least he watches that one. Even if he hasn't seen another rugby match since the last Six Nations.
I have respect for Clive Woodward for what he did for in 03. But what I do not have is, he said, and I quote, 2019, England versus New Zealand, that is the best I've seen England play in 10 years. A year later, Ireland versus England 2019 was the best I've seen England play in 10 years. And that was with Farrell at 10 and Manu Tuilagi at 12. And obviously, you know my opinions on George Ford, you know, my longings. But the thing is but it's just, sincerely, it just kind of annoys me how you could take an AI bot, with the stuff that he actually brings to commentary, he could probably bring so much more, but you could take an AI bot to commentary, program him with, like, for example, 10-12 axis. You've got to go 0-0 in at scoreline, two playmakers, 0-0 start of the second half. And that would be it. That would be his analytical input, which is such a waste.
You could also program the bot to have watched a Worcester game, and he might know who a few of the players are.
That's kind of that. Not knowing Ollie Lawrence.
Him at the weekend saying, apparently there's a lad called Barberry at Wasps who's quite good.
Barberry. He's questioning Barberry.
He said, apparently there's a
he
lad
said, apparently called, he yeah. exists. So... Clive Woodward is vaguely in the knowledge that Alfie Barbary exists.
Barbary, and then he's constantly writing these columns saying, like, oh, and the team I'd pick for England would be Danny Cipriani at 12, and then I'd put Freddie Burns at 13.
And, Martin Johnson in the row.
Yeah. Neil Best on the wing. and it's constantly ridiculous stuff he never would have done.
Wait a minute. I think I found it. I'm sorry. I think I found it. I was literally searching for ages. It just says, amazing set piece. Wait, is this it? This is it, yeah.
Okay. We're going to commentate in the style of Clive Woodward.
Wait, no, I'll tell you what.
Oh, I know the one you're about to show me.
Yes, I do know that try.
So, it's like dummy inside loop play, you know, like...
With
you know,
the guy turning his back.
Followed by a drunken spider. Sorry, I'm, you know, 12 pass at 10, passing 12, 12 pass back to 10, 10 passes to, you know, standard loop.
Yeah.
New Zealand used to run all the time.
So when I was in Colts, we were coached by an Australian, like, rugby league guy with that kind of background who tried to teach us that move, and it went horribly every single time and always ended with the 12, like, having his back folded in half because he turned it to the defence.
Yeah. And simplicity is often... the key with rugby moves, I think, like simple runs yes. well. It's, I mean, don't get me wrong, it's just so flashy and so, looks so
it's
nice.
Fun to watch when it yeah, when exactly, it comes off, isn't yeah. it? Yeah. Yeah.
Like speaking of this Argentina.
Yes. Speaking of fun to watch for completely different reasons.
What about the Catita try? The Italian Catita try? I think it was their second try. It was the most simple thing I've ever seen. It was basically just. They maybe had a cut. They had like almost a second wave coming from behind, but I think that was totally by accident. It was literally passing in front of the man, and Katita like beat about three defenders on the wing.
Mm. Oh, it was an unbelievable finish, wasn't
it's
it?
Lovely. Yeah. It's lovely. Tobaldi kind of like dummy and go through a gap. None of this like Stefano Grisoni randomly dropping the ball and then booting it 20 yards.
Yeah,
like
why did they keep on booting? They got to the edge and they didn't want to return
every time.
It was like they just both sent it sky high. I mean,
I genuinely think at this point it was just wingers are afraid of contact. Like, yeah. I think the Lambda twins in particular are terrified
there's,
of contact.
There's a lot of that. There's a big trend in that in this whole World Cup, to be fair. All back three players. Like, if somebody puts a grubber on along the floor, instead of fielding it and taking contact, they'll usually boot it into Dutch. Just
it
hack
happens.
It, like, hack it out.
Baldy does it. He regathers a grubber and he's got about 10 metres before the opposition chase gets up to him.
Yeah.
And he just kicks it straight out on the full, 2 metres in front of him.
Yeah.
And you could have taken contact, you could have tried to kick it in field, you could have done literally anything else and it would have been a better option
than that. Yeah. So talking about the changes that Italy made, so yeah, you mentioned Catita playing on the wing, with Massioletti is the other one.
Yes.
Who stands out for good and bad reasons, I think. Because like you see him get the ball and when he takes off, you go like, oh, okay, he's the danger man. Because he's evidently very fast. But clearly useless at everything else.
Knocked on so much. Like,
yeah.
Do you really reckon that the wingers and the sense, like, obviously in rugby you have your predefined roles. Mm. Do you reckon that these guys actually like had these roles, or they were told just the game? Like, seriously, it's just so amateur that it's just kind of hard to keep. Like, he is in the completely wrong position. He should not be there. You know, it's basically that for half of it. And kind of, I understand if they want to be fluid and, you know, total rugby and all that principle, but I just didn't understand half of it. It just made very little sense to me. I mean,
at one point in the first half, Hugo Porter goes for a cross kick because there is so much space. And this is inside the 22. It goes for a cross kick because there's so much space in the Italian line. But the winger has not held his depth at all and has to sprint from a few yards outside.
He's probably about 30 metres in field, isn't he? When he should be on the touchline.
If he is on the touchline, it's the easiest try to ever score.
Yeah.
As it is, he still gets the ball first, but he knocks it on because he's afraid.
It's still a sitter that he misses.
Coming across as well. Oh, absolutely, should have scored it. Yeah. I think Cotita actually plays quite well. I think he looks like, you know, he is still Italy's all-time top try scorer. He still holds that record, which is rare.
Player I did not know that.
That far back in the amateur, still holding records like that.
That is rare. Wow.
And I think he actually does look like quite a well-rounded player.
He does, yeah. There's the very first thing that kind of happens in the game is that Argentina kick to touch and then Italy get the first line out. And then they stand collectively as a back line so deep that they actually catch all of the balls that they throw and they manage to successfully get to the wing. And it's like, that's basically the first time we've seen it in this whole World Cup and we're like 10 games in.
Just standard catch and pass. Yeah. That you've got players like, for example, like the commentator, I remember him going, oh, they're running onto the, this is how Italy, the backs are playing really well. They're running onto the ball. I'm like, okay, that's a world class backline trait, being able to catch a run onto the ball. Okay. Yeah. Fair
you
one.
Can do what an underage team can. Now go and play the All Blacks.
But another thing that I love, which happened just after this, was Grant Nisbet on the commentary saying, in fact, no, it wasn't. Do you know who was the co-commentator?
It's our friend Earl again.
Earl, our good old Earl, said, I'm quite enjoying this. We haven't seen a ball kicked yet. And he said that after there'd already been two kicks.
Yeah, two of them out on the full.
Yeah.
are you paying attention? No, because he's looking at his lunch he needs to get. He's not getting his lunch at 2 o'clock now. He's going to get it while the game's on.
Do you reckon it was that amateur that no one gave a fuck? Like, well, that's fine. You know, just go, you know, like, we don't need you as long as we got someone here covering.
I mean, I kind of lost track of a lot of the game, and I think that's kind of showing in the how this is going. But there's, you know, there's a lot of like just little niggly stuff in the first half.
It's a high tackle by De Silva. Like that, you'd get red carded immediately for that. He literally rips his, you know, grabs his scruff and sends him momentum, sends the guy flying halfway in the air.
There's a moment after a scrum where the Argentine flanker, Chaveo, dives on the ball as it's coming out of the number 8's feet, the Italian number 8, Zanon's feet, of no relation to Marco Zanon. And Innocente, the Italian captain, and now the president of the Italian Rugby Union, dives in on him a few seconds later after the penalty's been blown, elbows him in the face. Something then happens that you can't quite see because the body's obscuring it. And he comes up holding his jaw, which looks like it's bleeding. So something happens after he elbows his opposite number in the face. And we don't know what.
Yeah. And there's at least three punches that go in throughout the game. Like there's...
Travaglini, like he got penalised. Like you just see it as a blatant as hell. Like, you know, it happens so often in the ruck, but it's just never seen.
Yeah. Right hook, right in front of the referee as well, and the touch judge.
And it's a penalty.
Penalty only.
No more.
Oh, the glory days.
The other thing about Argentina, so as I mentioned, we had a scrum half last week who could barely pass and was very good at sniping, but could barely pass. And this week, Martin Languia comes in for his first and only cap. The reason, of course, was that Argentina's first choice scrum half, their best scrum half, who is apparently a real, like, class player, refused to fly. He was definitely terrified of flying, so would only play tests that took place in Argentina.
A Catalan Furcu situation.
Yep. So refused to leave Argentina, leaving Hugo Porter stuck with this like trail of nothing.
Oh, man.
He could never catch anything.
You feel for Porter, don't you? Man, that's unfortunate. Should we have talk about sort of the chronology of like the scores in the game? So there's penalties exchanged. Collado has, as you mentioned, Robbie, earlier, that he has quite a lot of shots at goal.
I mean, he is 1 from 5 at half-time.
Yeah, that are unsuccessful. But Porter is looking twice the player he did in the previous game. He still skids a drop goal and a penalty along the floor.
Of course he does. It was 1987. What are you expecting?
Yes, yeah, exactly.
And his first touch is he throws a pass that goes horrendously behind the guy he's passing to.
Yeah.
And I did think, like, oh, was Hugo Porter just shit?
Yeah.
Was he just not that good? And he's not. He actually does play.
No,
very
he pulls
well,
it back and he does. He scores a couple of quite difficult penalties as well.
With everything we were saying about it's difficult to tell if someone's playing well, having now watched 10 games of this,
yes,
I'm starting to come around to the fact that Hugo Porter has an all right game.
Yeah, yeah.
Mauro Godin, the Italian lock, I think it was. Mm. Just the work rate. Got to give credit where credit's due. You know, don't get me wrong. Like, it's not hard. You know, the pack is just in one congested blob in the middle, and the back line is assembled around it. Like, what was it, like 5-6 man clear outs? But I've respected 4 because he was always the one, like when the ball was going wide, he was the one sprinting to get closest to it. You know, you got to give credit for the unseen work that
absolutely done there. I love the fact that if you were to take the kind of modern formations and you look at it and go like, okay, at times Wales and Ireland run a 1-3-2-2, you've got Crusaders running a 2-4-2, Italy and Argentina here were both running an 8.
8-0-0-0-0.
I mean, I used to run when I was younger, it was a 7-1, basically, or something like that.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So, to be honest, we've covered probably the majority of the important things in the first half, but I think my favourite moment in the first half, in fact, there's 2 favourite moments in the first half. One of them is Collado's penalty, where Innocenti doesn't, it's about 45 metres out from the try line, right near the corner, sort of near the touchline. And Innocenti doesn't once negotiate with his kicker to ask if he wants to take the penalty. He just signals straight to the referee like, yes, he's going to kick this over, regardless of whether or not he wants to, because he is my child. And Claudio just nails it. It's like, oh, fair play. Didn't see that one coming.
I mean, there's a moment in the second half where, as I say, from being 1 from 5, I think 1 from 6 at this point,
yeah,
they go for goal. And I genuinely put my head in my hands. And I was just sort of going, I was like, why am I watching this? And then he nails it.
It's always when you least expect it, he pulls out a brilliant kick.
The moment you've given up completely is when he finally gets one.
Yeah, and he's clearly got a big boot on him.
Yeah, which is the problem. Look, if you can nail the ball between the post from a restart, you can learn to kick accurately.
I'm just thinking, imagine if you did see that, like you just saw like you just saw that and I'm like, oh, that's a Nesbo, that's a throwback to the 87 days, you know?
And I completely get now, because at the start of this, we were surprised when the ball from a kickoff going out on the fall, going dead, was, or even going over the, you know,
it was a 22, wasn't it?
22.
Yeah. I was like,
you could see why they changed that rule.
Yeah. Considering, I think there's maybe like 10 restarts in this game and maybe 8 of them are kicked deliberately dead.
Yeah.
And the number of scrum feeds that you had going on, like, I mean, just like, you've got to miss the scrums where it's just, there was no crouch bind, you know, set, anything like that. It's just like, let's just go.
There's a point where The Italian hooker, Galazzo, he clearly uses a kind of tactic to slow himself down to catch his breath, because he binds around his loose head, and then his tight head's saying, come on, come to me. And he goes, no, give me a second. Because evidently, as soon as he puts his arm around his tight head, they have to then engage or something like that. And he says, no, give me a second, to maybe put the Argentines off or something. I don't know.
It's like the original breakfoot.
The what?
Never mind.
Well, the Kit Kat call that apparently has been going around the US.
Oh, yeah.
Have a break, have a Kit Kat, fake an injury.
The other favourite part of the first half that I was going to mention was, at one point, Sebastian Salvat makes a line break from throwing a nice dummy on a kick return, but it's after the ninth pass of the movement without a single ruck. Because they spread it wide left and then back right and then back to the middle, all before there's been a tackle made.
Was this in the 22? Was this in their own?
Yes.
22? Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was like the last phase of a league, of league. You know.
Yeah.
It was like crazy.
And eventually, I think Italy had decided that they were so committed to passing every ball that the dummy just wasn't an option, because the guy seems to have Salvat lined up all right. But it must be like, you know, you're playing a rugby video game and you think you've heard that somebody pressing the right-hand pass button. You think you've heard that click of the button and you think, right, I'm going to drift onto the next guy now. But nope, Salvat goes straight through despite seemingly being marked.
I mean, there is one other thing that happens towards the end of the first half.
Oh, yes.
Where I got so excited, because there's been so many times in this World Cup, as we mentioned, about like fullbacks just putting the ball out for no reason, people just like not caring about possession, people not diving on it. Finally, it gets penalised that we have Mario Pavan, the Italian number six, just after a loose ball, randomly hacks it into touch from midfield. And the ball goes out, at which point Juan Lanza is ready and he is waiting. And he throws it quickly to Diego Costa Silva, who makes a really quite lovely break, weaves in, weaves out, draws the fullback perfectly and puts Lanza over for a try. Finally,
competence by Lanza.
Yeah.
I mean, that as my favourite moment. I was talking about that quick line out, you know, from De Silva had a bad game in so many ways, but he just made some really good reads, in fairness. Because it was almost like that Crusaders try. Remember, I think it was against the Blues, where, you know, literally you just had, like, the bloke at the line out and then just literally, like, last second, you know, comes straight through, takes that short pass.
Oh, yeah.
That's probably going to become a thing now, to be fair, though. I do think that quick line out, you know, especially after what Scotland did against
Just
like, you get that feeling. It's innovations like that are going to get... I'm sorry. No,
but you win... We're kind of lucky that Wales cut it off so well the following week. They'll probably slow that down because there was an instant show of how you'd stop this.
Sure, yeah. And I think because in 1987, before they did the quick throw as we know it, it was basically just as long as it goes straight and five, you can take your line out at any time. Anyone can throw it. Oh, I know they still can now, but like that's the only real conditions, even if the opposition aren't set. So I wonder if there will be, in future, people sort of playing with the law books interpretations on that.
I've always wondered if we'd start to see at some point more scrum halves throwing in.
Yeah.
You know, scrum half throws in because they're usually the most accurate passer in the team anyway, so it's not that massive stretch.
Like in sevens.
Yeah. And then they can run around and you don't have to double up, you know, they can run out into position. I don't know. It's a thought. It's a thought that is probably a long way off happening. If it ever does happen, it probably won't. Unless we coach the Barbarians. In which case, we'll get round this by just playing, like, Humain Kessler at scrum half.
Yeah.
Just pick a random tier two hooker, put him in at scrum half, and hope for the best.
Who would be your Barbarians team now, then?
Oh, mate. We've discussed this. How long have you got? No, I mean, tell you what, give me one...
Hit me.
So, we have an ongoing document. Give me a position, and I'll give you the players we have currently jotted down as potential Barbarians for this squad.
Four.
Okay, that's, I think, a very good choice. So our second row for the our dream Barbarian squad, Harjo Snyman, Darcy Swain.
Yes.
Federico Rutsa, because you've got...
He gets carried away.
If there's a lock who sometimes takes it at the front of a free pod and grubbers it, you've got to pick him in your Barbar squad.
Yeah.
Mick O'Driscoll. Out of retirement.
I was about,
He did it once. Before. He did it once.
Strategy card, and let's see if it pays off for him.
Roman Sazi, the La Rochelle captain, who's been going for them since they're in like the second, third division, and just worked his way up. He's like 37.
Uncapped, isn't he?
Uncapped.
He's an important barbarian's rule.
And Spain's Manuel Mora, yes, who is a massive, very quick second row with a top knot.
So when we watched him, I once just decided to nickname him Top Knot Sam because I didn't know his name, and it stuck. His name's not Sam.
That's fair one. To be fair, I love what you call Nick White though. Like, you know, I absolutely,
the Biz Boy.
Yeah, I absolutely love it.
It was my friend had never watched rugby before, and she happened to be like coming to mind for something afterwards, and she kind of came early, arrived whilst like Australia's South Africa game was on, the second half was on. He came on at half time, and she just became absolutely obsessed with him. It was the game where he took his mouth guard out and threw it at the floor in protest at the referee. He turned to, I think it was Bongi and Mbonambi or one of the South African pack, and did like the eyes, like, I'm watching you.
Why would you do that to, like, that nine were always way too gobby. You know,
it was incredible. And at one point she said, oh, he's just a little piss boy. I love him. And I went, well, that's sticking.
So many people have complimented that phrase there, haven't they? Which is really good. Of all of the things you've said, Robbie, on your videos, the one that you didn't make up is the one that everybody loves.
Yeah, obviously. You know, the thing I've learned from doing these videos is the less I can make up, the less I am involved, probably the better.
Is that the reason why you employ me now?
No. Look, yes. Let's go.
Oh, but yeah, that's what it gets up to. Like when you start running your own company, basically, and you get your own offices, Robbie. You know, like, then after that, delegation is the key of art of leadership. It is the way forward, really.
So, Will, you come up with all the stuff people like, and I'll fill in the gaps.
Yeah. And you'll tear them down. You'll take them out of the video.
Yeah.
You can edit this out if you want later. Totally fine. Mm. But I do feel that a video, you know, I could do a collaboration with you guys at one point.
I would
enjoy that. I would enjoy that.
I think that would work.
I would enjoy that. And, you know, you're so much better at analysis than either of us are.
Yeah.
Debatable. Really, I just literally watch a game multiple times until trends pop out in my head. That is literally it. That's all I do. It's my dad, for example, like to this day, like, he'll call me and go, no, you were totally wrong there. You know? I'm pretty sure it's all about just, you know, kind of keeping my ego in check, knocking me down.
Sure.
He sees it, obviously, he gets a relatively okay response of people, and he's like, you know, I just need to be that one guy that, you know, just kind of like, when you're there and you're just like talking to the girl at disco when you're 13 and he comes over and just embarrasses you. Literally, this is what dads have to do, I suppose, but... I'd love that 100%.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. We'll your people talk to my people, and we'll make it happen. We'll make it happen.
Wait, I am your people.
I am my people. I am one people.
Do you guys not have people? I've got people. I am not that important.
We've got all the lawyers, but yeah.
Yeah, but no people.
Lawyers aren't people.
You heard it here first. No, you didn't. Anyone that's met one knows. Ooh, controversial.
Sick.
Why am I still talking?
Why not Cameron Wokey as in your lock set? Partnership.
Is he in as a back row?
I feel like we must have made this team before he decided he was suddenly a second row.
I mean, so our back rows, and the back rows are still a work in progress. Like, we're still adding into it all the time. Ellis Jenkins.
Yeah, hero.
Tyler Ardron, captain, because I like the thought of there being like a tier two captain as the captain. Constant Beckling, who I don't know if people remember Constant Beckling. He's
come up on this podcast once before.
He was the captain of a South African schools team that won the schools cup. And I think he maybe played a bit of Curry Cup after that. But he became famous for an interview, a post-match interview. He came out very proudly and went, I am so proud of the boys. They played with enormous testicles.
And from that moment on, he became my hero.
Yeah.
I'm reminded of Leroy Jenkins.
Very similar.
Ellis Jenkins.
Yeah. Raimundo Martinez of Chile, who is of course a fan of the channel and after his Man of the Match interview. Yeah.
So we want to repay him.
That was unbelievable.
By giving him a shout out in the Bar Bars team.
And then we've also got Arthur Ettore, because we just wanted a massive shit in there.
Yeah, we needed a dickhead. We need to fulfill the quota.
I feel like there's room to add to this. There's room.
Yeah, I think Cameron Wokey can go in there. Given Connor's joining our coaching team, I feel like he has a wild card pick that he can choose himself. So
I love
George Ford will be mine out of retirement.
Okay,
you know,
100%,
we'll bring him out of retirement just because. Oh, he does not get the plaudits he deserves. That guy.
Richard, oh no, I can't believe you've got George Ford's three biggest fans who aren't related to him, and he's only come up in passing in an hour of this.
Yeah, I always felt he was incredibly mistreated, you know, really harshly treated. I can't say it better than your video, you know, to be fair, just in terms of his ability to adapt, you know, to any situation on the field and know exactly how he wants his forwards, his alignment, his intelligence, and the ability also to take the line on himself, which he does do. You know, he does do. I mean, I understand why Eddie's bringing in Marcus Smith, even though I'm not going to lie, like the hype has just become a little bit. Less said about that, the better. I don't want to fuel that whole thing. But even though he's a very good player. But you just feel that I hated when Ford came on, like, totally ruined the game, totally ruined it for him. He didn't fucking touch the ball.
He had two touches, and both of them were really positive, really good.
Yeah. Like, England got over the game line in both of his touches in that game. And he didn't even have to make any tackles, did he? I think. No.
No, it was nothing. It was just people piling in because they... It was like people were looking for this confirmation bias about finding if there's anything to confirm it.
Yeah. Yeah.
The thing is, he knows when to bring people onto him. He knows when to literally only take a couple of steps forward and then pop that pass and have his guys come up. He knows when to take it to the line with his boys. He knows when to...
He's the best in the world at that. Right. At exactly that one skill, like, arguably the most important skill for a 10 nowadays.
He knows the best carry and what pass and what depth he needs to be at to deliver
and
that carry.
Specifically, like, how to get the ball to him, whether it's playing out the back of a forward group or, you know, having a screen play in front of him or just getting it straight from 9, like... There's so many options and he always gets the right one.
Like I think George Ford has the best rugby brain of any player I've ever seen.
Yeah.
I think like Foy Dupree is maybe in the conversation, but I think George Ford is like another level in terms of the way he not only sees the game.
Players who
him,
will be good coaches when they retire.
Yeah, like, or he is playing the game usually like.
If he doesn't win a World Cup, he'll win a World Cup as a coach. You know, that's the way I'm looking at it, to be fair.
Yeah. Like I just you know, like when you have chess masters who say, well, I was playing like 18 moves ahead because I predicted every move they could possibly make and I worked out every permutation from there. Ford feels like he's doing that, but in something as lively and fast moving as a game of professional rugby.
Yeah.
But
if Ford's doing that, it's like, you know, talking about Untermax, like, you know, everyone's playing chess, he's playing checkers. You know, it's a little bit like that. He's just, oh God. But the thing is, I was having a word because I had a word about this with, I had a word about this with Robbie Will only after the game. And the thing is, it's the reason that Untermac is so bloody good is that there's almost this near telepathic understanding between the rest of his... I mean, he's got that with DuPont, admittedly.
Yeah, yeah.
When he takes the ball forward, everyone... Like, for example, he takes the ball like, and he doesn't even call. You don't see his mouth move. But you just... when he actually breaks the line... Everyone else starts running off him to try and actually provide options and they're the synergy of in that team is incredible. Like their ability, and don't get me wrong, they're not unbeatable. You know, you take out the French back row and they're not gonna do that well. But for me, it's just kind of strength. I mean, I know obviously England are trying to hold cards to their test. I know Wayne Piback is developing this game plan, you know. But the thing is, I don't know if you can really ever replicate that telepathy in the camps without playing club rugby together, which is what these guys have, you know, so many.
Yeah.
The other thing is, I think Untermac just has this kind of... And I think a part of it is, you see it like with Ford as well, of like both of their fathers were... very high level rugby players. They're probably around rugby constantly.
Oh yeah, well, yeah. And they've heard all the language.
And it's not just like they started playing rugby at 4. They were around it nonstop. They were watching it. They were there. Like it was their entire life. There's this thing with like I've seen a few people say this weekend about Undermac's pass, that, you know, to DuPont in that first minute, the results in the try. Like, oh, that easily could have been intercepted, or that could have been picked off, or that, you know, could have been caused for whatever. But like, the thing is, right, if you go through Roman Antwerp's entire career, there isn't one of them where it was. Like,
yeah.
I've seen so many times people gone like, oh, that easily could have been intercepted.
I was saying this,
actually give one.
I was saying this to Lee, like,
picking the...
He's so close on so many occasions, but he always
wants,
picks the right one. Yeah, yeah.
He never doesn't fall that way. Him running the ball from behind his own goal line, he was never.
It's a 1% margin that he possesses where he knows. Yeah, that he knows the exact 1% margin of will this pass potentially be intercepted, and that's such an insane skill because.
Okay.
Yeah.
Here's a potential question, right? And it isn't a real question. It's not a potential question. I'm actually going to ask the question. If you put Roman Antemak into the Argentina team and George Ford into the Italy team from this game, who wins?
Argentina. Because they're a better team in this game and they have Roman Antemak.
It's a break.
And also, just like... George Ford would be way too smart for all of these. They'd have no idea what the fuck he's on about.
I think it's such chaos, this game, in terms of unbroken play and unstructured situations and stuff like that, that for me, you want... I mean, of course, Fordy is incredible at conducting an attack, but for me, it's Antemak just... both of them have a great feel for the game. But my personal perspective is, you know, in terms of being able to just, like, reveling chaos. Absolutely. Reveling chaos. That is Antemak to a T.
That's a good question, though.
Other part of that, though, is you look at like how George Ford played off the bench against Australia in the World Cup, right? And the amount he kicked the ball and just pinned them back when he came on. I could see him just doing that and just absolutely kicking the lever off it.
It would be great if Italy got to bring George Ford off the bench in this game.
As an embryo.
I think it's that was a very good way of getting us semi back on track, Robbie.
Yes,
I respect that.
No.
No need to apologise.
It's what we're all here for.
Yes. The last thing I want to touch on in the first half, because we've done the try, is there's a point where Italy start this move by accidentally throwing the ball at the ref. The referee says play on, and they make a brilliant line break down the right-hand side. And it's that thing in this World Cup where every time somebody strings three passes together, you're just dreading. It's like dreading, like, okay, how are they going to screw this up? Who's going to knock it on? You know, what wrong pass are they going to throw? Whatever. And it goes okay. They manage to recycle a phase. And then they pass the ball from the base, scrum half, passes to Macioletti, the right winger, who has pretty much nobody in front of him. Everybody just stood in what is, in this scenario, the backfield. They're inside the 22. And for some reason, he diagonally chips the ball, whereas if he did literally anything else, he would have scored, or his team would have scored. And it's just astounding to look at.
I think I remember that occasion, actually. I just don't understand why kicking by the wingers was so prevalent. They got it.
Yeah.
Booted it, like it sent it immediately up. What logic? What logic do you reckon they were following?
I genuinely think it's fear of contact.
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it.
Brutal rucks were at the time. You don't want to end up in the bottom of one of those.
Yeah, especially when you're the size of like the Lanza brothers, who were both quite short. But yeah, it's very amateur, as you say.
Do you want a quick fun fact about the Italy 15?
Go on.
Every single one of this Italian starting 15 went on into coached at quite a decent level.
Really?
All of them coached to either like national age grade or like top 10 equivalent.
That's an amazing stat. There can't be many World Cup teams in history that you could say that about.
No. And I believe it's Fabio Gentiloni, the 13, I believe, who went on to coach Italy at the 99 World Cup.
Right.
He was brought in just before, because the coach quit. He was then fired afterwards when he didn't get out of the pool stage, which we'll get on to in like 6 years' time, in 1999.
Well, speaking of Gaetaniello, the 13, as you say, there's something pretty interesting that that happens with him, because he misses a bit of a sitter, doesn't he? We're skipping ahead a little bit, but
no, let's we've covered most of the game by talking around.
We've gone in a very funny order here, haven't we? But yeah, because Rafael Madero, the 12 for Argentina, gets the ball inside his 22 and goes for what looks like an incredibly safe pass if he threw it to the man, not across the blades of grass on the floor. And it bounces perfectly up to the breadbasket of Gaetaniello, 5 metres from the goal line, and he somehow blows it and knocks it on.
I also want to apologise. It was Mascoletti, the winger, who was the coach at 99.
Right, the one who kicked that ball away.
Yep, quite a few times. Yeah, oh, also, half-time, want to quickly mention, right?
Yes.
The two very differing approaches to getting the teams hydrated, to taking a water. So Argentina have a massive pot and they're all reaching into it with these tiny little cups and like sipping from them, like they're taking shots of water.
Yeah.
Whereas Italy pass around a massive like flagon bag that they all take swigs out of. And they just have like what looks like a handbag filled with water that they all just like sip out of and then pass on to the next guy. Just two
it's like they've got a beer keg that they're passing around, isn't it?
Very un-COVID safe and they should be locked up. Yeah, I mean, we end up... Should we move on to the try, the Innocenti try?
Yeah, let's do it.
I mean, it's all a bit of a state, the lead up to this. It's
just a scrum, isn't it? That's like totally gone to absolute... Yeah.
Yeah.
Stuff.
Yeah.
I suppose it's a scrum in the 22. It's as good a platform as any, but like any scrum in this game, it wheels. Like, so you've got like I think it wheeled clockwise, you know, for Italy. So they're totally, then they decide to go blind anyways, don't they? They go towards where their back row are going to be. But like, no, you know, let's not like go where we've actually generated a really potential good open side now. Let's just go back to the fucking strength.
Honestly, nobody had figured out how to do like efficient eight pick and goes other than be big at this stage. Like there's points in other games where I've had, instead of the eight pops it to the nine who stood off, the eight has ran out the way so the nine can pass it to the eight again, which just puts the nine under heaps of pressure that's really unnecessary. But it's just funny seeing them like not try and consider logic on trying to like win a collision.
Yeah, it works for them, which is infuriating. Yeah. I mean, because the score is written down, because there's no scoreboard, I was waiting with bated breath as the conversion was being taken and as, you know, the teams were jogging back to their own half to find out what the score was, because I would be furious if Italy were ahead.
Yeah, and it became 10-9 at that point. And I was still thinking, like, how is it this close?
Yeah, because Italy were not good.
No. But then it reached
I'm not
going to
say Argentina were good either, but they were better.
No.
The only time Italy looked like threatening in any way, shape or form, like, or looking competent, was off like first phase lineup ball. Basically, it was the only time that maybe one scrum, they just didn't look like they were committed. They didn't look like they were fretting at all. And then when they did, they kicked it away.
It then reaches a point where both teams just become really committed to making it a more high scoring game, so the guy can stay instead of going to his lunch, because everybody just wants to give penalties away at this point. It was 10-9, then it's 13-9, then it's 13-12, then it's 16-12, all within about 3 or 4 minutes.
And then it kind of starts to happen. So it gets to 16-all. And
yeah, the Contita try I mentioned earlier. Yeah.
So it's Contita scores.
That happens, yeah.
Superb finish. Really, really good try. And Argentina get into the opposition half. They hang a high ball, pretty good high ball, like 10 metres out from the Italian line. Tobaldi, to his credit, takes it, but he doesn't call the mark. He is actually eaten by the entire Argentine team, who flood over and turn the ball over and drive right up the try line.
I remember seeing those scrums on the 5 meter line. Like how they got sent backwards over the line. Like what twice, didn't they?
And this was, of course, before that they'd established that if you knock it on playing trial line, for example, that then goes to 5 metres out. That was before that became a law. So, you know, if you knock it on 1 inch out from your try line, then the scrum will take place 1 inch out. You could basically score from a scrum feed, couldn't you?
Theoretically, yeah. I'm pretty sure. And I'm very glad for the laws that were brought in. The most recent ones also, because I think they're favouring the attacking team now, finally. But no, in terms of that, it was just, there's some things that you just never think that you'll see, because we were raised in a totally different era of rugby. And that is, like, I don't know what to say, really. It's just
yeah
But also, right, so Argentina have that scrum where it looks like they're going to shove it over, but they don't quite, penalties given, etc. If anyone is captain except for Hugo Porter, the goal kicker, they're going for scrum again.
Yeah.
But it's the kicker, so they take the shot.
He was good. He was on. He was not bad, to be fair.
Yeah. It was a great kick to seal it at the end, wasn't it? But did you hear the commentator on this?
What did he say?
So, of course, he's committed to not going for his lunch, and he's going to stick for the end of the game. And he reflects and realizes that he's made a really bad decision. Because what he says is, it's a shame that Porter's gone for goal there. So sad that this game's finished like this, with a penalty. It would have been so much better if we'd seen a try scored. And so that's the sort of thing you say when someone gets red carded at the end of a big famous win, or something like that. And he's really he genuinely says it's disappointing that Argentina have opted to win the game instead of trying to score a try.
I wonder if he was Irish and in 2013, if Johnny Sexton had kicked that penalty kick against the All Blacks, I wonder if he'd be saying the same thing. You know, I wonder if he'd be going, oh, I really wish they'd go. No, you'd go fucking go 2 minutes left, 4 points. Like, oh, it's just silly. It's just
Wales at the weekend. You know, there's still people complaining about taking a drop goal that won the game. But there
that's
we go.
Play. It doesn't matter how you score your points as long as you score your points. You know.
Yeah, spot on. So yeah, 1916. They're literally about to win the game.
3 minutes to go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, another thing I noticed quickly is Grant Nisbet calls every time a scrum goes against the head. He says, "Oh, that's a tight head there," and he puts the emphasis on tight rather than head, which is interesting. I didn't know that. That's maybe where the words tight head came from. That they're the ones who win scrums against heads. Maybe, I don't know, but interesting piece of changed terminology.
I always figured it's because it's the position where your head is in a tight space.
Yeah, I thought
it's the position that makes the most
sense. It's where
you've
got two people. Well, you're excited, aren't you? Yeah, I don't know. I don't know anything
about the dark arts. Like, zero. All I know is get the ball to a certain part of the back, a certain part of the, at the back of the base of the scrum. That's all you really want.
Yeah, hope for the best.
And then, so Italy get a penalty. What drama! 40 meters out on the touchline, Collodo, who is 3 from 9, he's got as many as a third of his kicks, goes for goal. 40 meters out from the touchline.
Boy,
place
I
your
wonder
bets.
How this is gonna go. Look, he's obvious. Hit a third of his kicks, which is a significant improvement on last time. I'd be delighted if I was him.
He obviously shanks it miles to the left. But the drama was great while he was lining the kick up. And they're like, course, oh, could he put it back? And no, not at all. And from the resulting dropout, Hugo Porter hits a bloody 50-22, doesn't he?
Hugo Porter hits like 3 50-22s. Yeah. It's very impressive.
Yeah.
Yeah, then the ball is won back at the line-out. Apparently, it was a regular tactic that teams would space their players out and leave players in the backfield and so, or the backs, you know, in order to attack better. And they wouldn't really commit to the line-out because line-outs were a lottery anyway. So what's the point?
Yeah.
It's the equivalent of like a tail ball in a minute, you know. And
who
so.
Who developed lifters, by the way? Do you guys know who developed lifters in the line-outs?
I don't know. I don't know when it starts. Because obviously it's outlawed at this point. There's a few games where players are penalised for lifting the line-out.
It happens at one point in this game, yeah.
Mm. So I don't know. It's one of these things that we're probably going to come across as we journey between World Cups.
I wonder if it's one of those things that referees just stop bothering to penalise it and then it just became popular.
Just please have me on for 2003. Please have me
on. Oh, of course.
Okay, we will.
So yeah, so Argentina form more of the line-out, which obviously, you know, is a... because they're all massive lotteries anyway. What Italian forwards are about will commit to that, meaning that there is just the opposite number, or the scrum-half's opposite number. Who is the replacement by this point?
Fabio Gomez
is on for Argentina. It's still a starting scrum-half. Laurie Gula is on for Italy. There's also, right, when Languela goes off for Argentina, right? So he gets injured. They then rip his shirt off, the doctors, spray his shoulder with WD-40, seemingly. Tell him you're going to have to play on for 5 minutes because Gomez, the replacement, is still in the stands and he's got to go and warm up. So he has to play scrum off with a like injured, I think he dislocates his shoulder.
It looked horrible. Yeah, yeah. It looks horrifically out of place. And the doctors try to like re-jolt it back in.
He's got to play. They won't do that anymore now, will they? They won't
no.
really do that. Like back then, yeah, it was fine, but not anymore.
Yeah.
He's got to play like 5 minutes with a dislocated shoulder at scrum off. because the replacement hasn't warmed up yet.
Yeah.
Do you remember, like, Willie LaRue? He did something to his shoulder. Like, you got in Chasing the Sun. Rassi's like, he's got to stay on. He's got to stay on. You know, I'm like, oh, my God. These, you know.
And he couldn't catch the ball.
No.
And all South Africans have held it against him ever since, despite the fact he's an extremely good player and continues to play very well for the Springboks. But
Gomez scored a try at their last try. Yeah. Like, really nice try, actually, to be fair.
Yeah.
He dummies and goes off the back of that maul. And, yeah, his opposite number kind of falls off it. Falls off the tackle, not expecting.
You feel for his opposite man, don't you? But yeah, it is a well taken try with a really obnoxious dive.
Yeah.
And I just have, like, what a dick written down. And I stand by it, but I love it. I love it. It's proper, like, you know, shit out scrum half behaviour.
And speaking of what a dick, I think that brings us on to our dick of the day.
Yeah. Connor, you should start us off. You're very keen.
Oh, the thing is, I had Diego da Silva for ages, but then he made the Pumas first try, so you can't really give it. For me, I think it was Lanza, where he knocked on literally 2 meters before the try line. Like, you do if you're on my team and that happens, everyone puts in all the work and that happens. Yeah, you're getting your dirty pint. You know, let's just that's happening to you. You know,
I think that's fair. I think, Robbie, when you note that down, you should have the Lanza twins together as one nomination on the Dicks of the Day.
I can see a world in which they end up on either wing when we do our Dick of the Tournament team.
Oh, that's true, actually. Yeah, that's true. You separate them.
Okay. I had him very much...
tournament and, like, have a Dick of the Day all sporadically put throughout 1 to 15, basically. Like,
Yeah.
Epic!
We've been keeping a spreadsheet of every Man of the Match and Dick of the Day. And currently, the player of the tournament is the dog that invades the pitch in the first game.
With 3 votes as man of the match. Yeah.
So, yeah. So I had Pedro Lanza there for a very long time because it is pretty bad. Sebastian Salva, because I really liked him the first game. I hyped him a lot after that first game against Fiji. And then for him to repeatedly shit on my trust is very upsetting. Oscar Collodo as well, right? I'm sorry, but You can do all the fancy, flashy stuff around the park you like, but if you are putting as many restarts through the posts as shots at goal over 60 minutes...
That's fair.
You're in Dick of the Day contention.
Yeah.
And also, Daniele Tebaldi, because I really don't like Italy having a competent fullback in this game. Like, they're so much less fun for not having
what looks like
a middle-aged man who should run an ice cream parlour. Looking slightly confused at the back.
It did feel weird with all the knock-ons and, like, the just absolute, like, chaos of it. Seeing a 15 actually fielding the ball. It was so alien. It was like, this doesn't belong here. This belongs at a different time. We're not ready for it.
Also speaking, it belongs at a different time. Giano Zanon, the Italy number 8, looks like a mad scientist. He looks like Doc Brown. He's got this kind of, like, standout hair flowing out the side, but it's about being completely bald on top. And then he'll, like, kind of stand there at the back, kind of looking ponderous, like he's stroking his chin, coming up with, you know, like, grand philosophies. And then the moment after the scrum is engaged, he then dives in and shoves everyone, which is remarkable number 8 play. But, look, I am filling time because I have not decided which of my many contenders I'm giving Dick of the Day to. But in the interest of, should we say, not shitting on my own pride, I can't give it to Salvat, even though I think it is Salvat. So I'm going to agree with Connor and go with Pedro Lanza.
Okay. So, I mean, many of the names I've written down for Dick of the Day, and there's a lot, have come up already. But I am actually going to give mine to the referee, Mr. Quittington from England. So the reason for that is there's a point where 3 Argentines all go down injured. And he just goes around them, telling them to just get up and just saying, come on, let's go on with the game. Come on. And this isn't like the time wasting. It's like start of the second half. In fact, it might even be end of the first half. And there's one point where somebody is down holding his head and he comes up to the medics, the referee, and goes, is he all right? And they go, yeah, we're just having a look at him. And he goes, he's alive. That's enough. Play on.
Say that.
Yeah. You can hear him on the ref mic saying, he's alive. And then they kind of like go back to him a little bit. And he goes, that's enough. And makes him play on.
Can we throw in an extra nomination as cunt of the match?
Yeah,
yes, you can swear, by the way, Connor, to answer your question.
That's not good. That's really not good.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah.
at one point, there's a fight breaking out, and yeah, Roger Whittington, the referee, just starts grabbing players from both teams by the shirt and ripping them off each other. He's extremely, like, very rough school teacher who uses a cane.
Yes. He also gets nutmegged at one point, which is, you know, on the flip side, quite entertaining. There's also one of the Italian wingers gets nutmegged as well. So there's two in one game, which is pretty good. Before we do man of the match, can I just quickly address one question from the post-match interview?
Hmm?
Where they ask Hugo Porter, yes, do you think Argentina stand any chance of beating the All Blacks? Which is a loaded question in itself. But his response, I couldn't quite make out fully, because he says, if I think we don't have a chance, I won't get into the film, it sounds like he says.
Yes.
Is that what you thought he said?
Yeah. Yeah. And the thing is, in the time, even though I jotted this down, in the time since, my brain has rewritten it as I won't get into the bath.
Either one.
Yeah. No, but I won't get into the film. Maybe he is making the decision that Orlando Bloom should make every time he's offered a script.
It's and true.
And shouldn't get into the film.
It's true.
Refuse. It's better for everyone.
They then say, are you going to beat the All Blacks? And he's just like, shut up, mate.
Yeah, yeah.
He basically just ends the interview there.
I also enjoy Innocenti giving a really wholesome interview. And then after having looked fuming before it starts. And then at the end, when the interviewer says, thank you, he turns to the camera and goes, bye. And then walks off. Oh,
he was made to be an official. He was made to be a politician,
yeah,
wasn't he?
Yeah. So should we do man of the match?
Yes.
So, Robbie?
Yeah, so I mean, I think there's actually quite a lot of contenders, but because no one stands up and really stands out. Yeah, I think that Cotito looks really sharp whenever he gets the ball and he isn't booting it away randomly. I think Hugo Porter is a real contender. Danilo Gibaldi as well, I think, looks very good. But I think narrowly ahead of Porter, who I think is right there or thereabouts, I want to give it to Gabriel Trevilani, the Argentine number 8. Who
he's
is
good.
Really quick,
yeah.
Big engine, big work rate.
Powerful.
And yeah, has a few moments. As you mentioned, like the Mack Hansen moment where he takes a restart and charges 50 metres down the field, beating everyone.
Yeah.
And is only a Lacanio Am grubber kick away from being the greatest player to ever play the game. So for that, he is my man of the match.
That makes sense. That makes sense. I'm going to go for Hugo Porter because I think it might just be really satisfying improvement on the last game, which he also addresses in his interview where he says, yes, I didn't play very well in the last game. My improvement was good today, but hopefully it's better next week, which is quite nice. But yeah, no, I think he put them in the right areas of the park. He kicked well for the most part. There was just a few absolute howlers he kicked. But for me, Hugo Porter.
Okay. No, those are, but I actually have both of those in my, both of those, especially Trevor Glini.
Yeah.
I did have him in as one. However, for me, I thought there was a case to be made for Porto, also Cassetti, just Casita, simply because of that try that he scored. But I really, 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 really like Luis Molina's performance. And mainly because in scrum time, I think that Argentina, they were able to get a lot of domination because of Molina, you know, in terms
love
of
that.
Yeah, that was part of the reason. I mean, he in the loose, he was pretty good as well. You know, he did make some really good carries and he was really there for tackles, so good work rate. But it was mainly the fact that on the game, I just think that, you know, he was quite a big reason why the scrum was shit in both cases, but it was less shit for Argentina.
I like that. I really respect that call. I always like it when someone goes for a prop.
Mm.
It is. It's every now and then. You can't just give them pies and beer.
They need the glory that comes from a Man of the Match award on the most important podcast, which is why they all listen to that other one with the people that I'm not allowed to mention for legal reasons.
Oh, we're not. Okay, good. I was going to call it earlier, actually. I was going to mention it. It would have had it been edited out.
Thank you for listening. So, yeah, Connor, thank you for listening. No, thank you for being on.
thanks for listening. And for talking.
Pleasure listening. A pleasure talking as well.
Yeah, we've actually turned your mic off, so none of the stuff you said came through, but thank you for listening.
Oh, so I'm literally goldfishing the whole
time. Yeah.
That will be good comedy. I appreciate that.
where can people find you? Where can people find your stuff? Please plug everything you have, except your mouth, which you'll need to talk, because
Wibble Rugby is my channel at the moment, and will still be. I'm looking to start getting on with the URC because they've requested videos, so that's all good. But my latest thing is about the reason why France are really good at the moment, which unfortunately they are. Yeah, at the moment, guys, look, seriously, thank you very much for having me. It's been an absolute pleasure talking rugby with tactics and not having to do just plain old number crunching and a lot of which is very, very refreshing. Don't get me wrong, I love my job, I love what I do, but every now and then you do like branching out a little
bit. Rugby for fun rather than for work.
Yeah. Oh god, I watched the France versus Italy game in the spoons. In a spoon. That is the first time I've watched a game. And trust me, I had 3 for 10. I had the 3 for 10 meal deal. I had a pint of Angry Orchard, which is my favourite cider in the world. But there I am, just chowing down on chicken wings. I'm like, oh my God, this is the way rugby is meant to be played. I'm not looking over spreadsheets and models and calling and inputting data. I'm just enjoying the game. And
that's great.
It was so...
Love that for you.
So lovely.
Yeah, I'd quickly like to also just say, you know, thanks for coming on. I really enjoy your work. We often talk about how out of depth we are when we talk to the likes of yourself. And I also would, for anybody listening, vouch for your France video, because that's very, very good and very in-depth.
And essentially all of your work, everything you've ever done. Maybe.
Connor knows what he's on about.
Thank you, guys. It's really lovely of you to say so. Thank you. And same vice versa. You know, I wouldn't be doing this if I hadn't got into Squidge Rugby. Not in any dastardly sense, but
we'll cover that in a Patreon only episode.
But if I hadn't got in, seriously, in terms of where tactics can go, my eyes were open. I was still literally going over the set piece analysis, especially Scotland, England, and everything that's been going on. I always learn something from it. So thank you so much, guys.
Oh, no, thank you. I really appreciate that.
Pleasure. Yeah.
It means a lot. Thank you. And hey, thank you. Yes, you for listening. That goes to both of you as well. Thank you, Will.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you for rugby. Thank you to all the players involved in this game.
and not the referee.
Not the referee.
Thank you for listening. Please join us next time when the game we'll be covering will be France 55, Romania 12, from 1987. Why are we doing this again?
I don't know. But yes, we'll see you all then.
We'll see you then. Thank you very much. Good night.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.